of Rhode Island fell off the guided missile cruiser about 80 miles off the Rhode Island coast. The search has so far covered 2,500 square miles. USA Radio News.
I'm KFC's Extra Crispy Colonel, and you're the extra busy regular person who has to make dinner for a family of four. But you can shirk that responsibility because my Extra Crispy $20 fill-up from KFC contains 8 pieces of freshly double-breaded Extra Crispy chicken, 4 biscuits, 2 orders of mashed potatoes, and a side of coleslaw for just $20. That'll feed them. KFC, it's extra crispy good.
Pricing and participation may vary. Tax and substitutions extra.
After the federal government refused to help Mississippians who had their homes destroyed in tornadoes, the state now stepping in to do what the federal government wouldn't. Here's a story from Randy Bell.
FEMA said no to the tornado victims in 2 Mississippi counties. 2 weeks ago, it denied the state's request for individual disaster assistance. So the state now is providing $250,000 grants to homes in Montgomery counties to buy materials to rebuild the homes that were lost. Mississippi Emergency Management Director Lee Smithson says they'll use volunteers to do the work.
We're confident that the homes, especially in Durant, will be rebuilt in better shape than they were before the storm.
He says he and Governor Bride discussed appealing FEMA's decision to deny assistance, but he says there was nothing new they could show the government to back up that request. Randy Bell in Jackson.
Bill Cosby's trial in its 5th day in Norristown, Pennsylvania. The comedian accused of drugging and assaulting a former Temple University employee in 2004. Yesterday, a police officer testified that Cosby told him he gave the accuser Andrea Costin 1.5 Benadryl tablets before the two engaged in what he claimed was consensual actions. And a contractor accused of leaking classified NSA reports will remain in custody. Reality Winner pleaded not guilty yesterday, but a federal judge in Georgia refused to grant bail for the 25-year-old Air Force veteran. Winner allegedly gave the report detailing a Russian hacking attempt to the website The Intercept. USA Radio News.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Pat and Heidi and Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Well, good afternoon. It's the sports guys, except you are stuck with me today. Bill is at his boat, and I guess John went to the shore. That's what happens as soon as there's nice weather and not a lot going on in football. And I know I could talk about the Stanley Cup. I could talk about the basketball playoffs or championship. However, this is Pat Smith's, and knowing me, I talk football. In fact, I had to go to the Apple store today, meaning not apples that we eat, but we all now know that Apple is a computer. And, of course, one of the guys was a Cowboy fan, so we had an interesting discussion, to say the very least. But I thought I'd talk about, I don't consider this trivia, but talk about some of the best Super Bowl games. And, just talk a little bit more about these games and, who played and what was important about them. And, one of the things you might do is really figure out for kids who are just learning football. And, by the way, I find it interesting if they don't select the team of their father or mother. They usually select a team that I find it interesting. Often it's, it is either the team that some people, the uniforms, but usually it's a player. There's been a lot of people I know, certainly, many people became fans because Peyton Manning, they really liked Peyton Manning, Joe Montana. There are just so many other standout players, and that was the reason why somebody became, really a fan. I certainly know some people that, because of Tony Dorsett, that's their team because it was Tony Dorsett. Now, that's more difficult today because of the players who move around as much as they move around, and that is a little more difficult than in the old days, either in football or in baseball. Especially, I remember that most of the players on a team, you expected them there the next year. And what happens often now is when a team wins a Super Bowl, by the next year, you're really surprised at how many people are not there. But I did want to start out with one of my favorite players. And I'm not sure that he was in one of the best Super Bowl games. And of course, or one of the games that's ranked one of the Super Bowl best games. I don't want to have to do Dallas Cowboys, but I may have to do talk about the Dallas Cowboys. But I wanted to talk about Reggie White, but I don't believe that the game that he was in that was not considered one of the best Super Bowls. So anyway, we're talking a bit about not only the Super Bowls, but some of the most incredible plays in the various Super Bowls. So anyway, let's go back and figure about these are considered, at least by Jerry Rice, the most unforgettable plays in Super Bowl history. And now we probably remember that the January 22nd, 1989 Super Bowl, that was Super Bowl 23. There was just a little bit more than 3 minutes left in the game. Everything was on the line. Cincinnati Bengals were up by three, and that was a lot of pressure. And so that was interesting because I think that in that case, everybody was playing at their best. So if you go back to the early Super Bowls and where they were played, they were often played, some of the first ones were played out in California. They were played in Miami. And of course, one of not my favorite Super Bowl, but, one that would make the top 50 is the Super Bowl that my Packers lost on January 25th, 1998. They were playing the Denver Broncos, and needless to say, Denver entered that game as an underdog, I think as much as 11-point underdog. They had not won a Super Bowl in four prior Super Bowl appearances. And in fact, the AFC had not won a Super Bowl in the past 13 seasons. And so I attended that Super Bowl along with everyone else. I was confident that Green Bay would attend. And if you don't remember it, that was a Super Bowl that was held in San Diego. And I remember, in fact, and why we had to do this, I don't know. I remember having to take what looked like a trolley that had a zillion people in it packed together to get out to the stadium. So, let's talk about it a little bit. So the Denver Broncos had a Pro Bowl running back, and he stood out because it was in San Diego, and there was a lot of buzz about it, the fact that the reason I'm hesitating, and I'm I know at that point one of the things I'm remembering is that the Super Bowl in San Diego was special for Terrell Davis because that was where he grew up. But in any event, so the Super Bowl that was the Super Bowl in San Diego was number 49. Denver, as I said, was an underdog. And and as I remember, and I think I'm right, Green Bay came out and took a 7-0 lead on a 22-yard toss from Brett Favre to Antonio Freeman. And the Favre-Freeman, that was always beautiful to watch the two of them connect. And however, what we were concerned about is actually most of the people in the stadium were not rooting for Green Bay. They were really rooting for Denver. Denver had been and was the underdog in that game. Mike Shanahan, was there. Mike Shanahan, of course, was the coach who was hoping to really go and get, take this trophy. One of the, plays that, what they were hoping and what happened is that Terrell Davis was going to play a key role in answering Green Bay with a, score-boosting drive and touchdown. And he actually went 53 yards in 10 plays. This was the play that they talk about, including a 27-yard carry. So Davis at that point was able to even the score after he ran around the left end for that score. And I think everybody recognized in retrospect that it was an important series for Denver because they had gone down and scored. And they answered the Green Bay touchdown by, evening it up. And then with the game still tied at 7 in the late first quarter, Davis opened up Denver's drive with a 16-yard gain. Later, on a 2nd and 3 from the Packers' 10-yard line, he gained 5 off the right tackle for a first down. But then as he burst through the line, a defender stuck out his leg. Well, I don't think so. That's what they say, that a defender stuck out his leg and tripped Davis. And, but he did seem shaken up. He said that, he knew immediately afterwards. He said he knew immediately that he was going to get a migraine headache. And so I know the trainers came out in the field, and that was one of the concerns, that he would not be able to play through the whole game. And this was fairly well known that he'd been dealing with migraines most of his life, and apparently knew how they were triggered, and so that was going to be a concern for him for the rest of the game. Frankly, many of the Green Bay Packer fans thought that was going to be their excuse if, in fact, they lost the game. So, unfortunately, they didn't lose the game. So that, the migraine apparently caused his vision to waver, and he later said that when he had a migraine, it was like looking through a kaleidoscope, and the images were twisted around, and it was, even the football was distorted, and so it was, he said, it was difficult to gauge what was going on. And then apparently Davis informed his coach, meaning Shanahan, that his headache was so severe that he couldn't see straight. And as a result, he went into the game as a decoy, and that allowed Elway to run the ball for a go-ahead touchdown. Now, I have to tell you, sitting in the stands, I really always thought that the Packers would come back in that game. Right down to the last few minutes in the fourth quarter. I'm sure that at least all the Packer fans, we weren't discouraged. We really thought that they would come back and win the game. So it is true that most of the second quarter, Davis just sat out the game. And then there was, of course, an extended halftime. and that they always have that extended halftime in the Super Bowl. And so then the question is, you know, was he, meaning Davis, was he going to have vision cleared up so he could actually play? I don't know the severity of his migraines, but I do know that some people really can't do anything when they have a migraine. So at that point, there was a point where to start the second half, Denver was leading 17-14. He did lose, meaning Davis lost a fumble on the first play from scrimmage. And then that meant that Green Bay converted that into a three-point, into 3 points when Ryan Longwell scored a field goal. So at that point, the score was tied 17-17, and the Packer fans were enthusiastic. Denver fans were not. They were concerned that it would be one more loss, one more Super Bowl loss. And of course, as I said, the most of the fans, other than us diehard Packer fans, were rooting for Denver. They were the underdogs. Everybody wanted Elway to get a ring. They, and when you go to Super Bowl games, what happens is there are so many people who attend Super Bowl games that are not diehard fans for one or the other teams. In other words, they may like football, or they may be there just because it's the Super Bowl and they want to say they've been to a Super Bowl. So it's really unlike other football games where almost everyone in the stands is for one team or the other. There's a lot of, we don't really care, we want to see a Super Bowl. But in this case, it was palpable to me that, in fact, the crowd was with Denver much more than they were with Green Bay. So at this point then, there was, as I said, there was a mistake by Denver. And then there, unfortunately for Green Bay, their defense was pounded for 90 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns. So, and at the end, as I said, the Denver Broncos won the game 31-24. Davis, despite having this migraine, rushed for 157 yards. He actually became the first, as I recall, he became the first player in Super Bowl history to score 3 rushing touchdowns. And he was named the MVP, despite the fact that he didn't play most of the second quarter, or maybe even all of the second quarter. And so this, Super Bowl MVP did not go to Elway. And I think that was one of the real important parts of that game, and one of the reasons why that is considered, that game is considered one of the more unforgettable and one of the, important. Not that they're not all important, but certainly some of the plays in that game were very, very important, especially what Terrell Davis did. Now, there were some still some very good Packers. Of course, my favorite defensive player of all times, Reggie White, and he was extremely upset over that loss. Some of the other people who were, that I used to love to watch on the defense, of course, was Leroy Butler and Santana Dodson. Of course, Brett Farr was the quarterback. He had Dorsey Levens, Frank Winters, Earl Dodson, who, played offense. Mark Chmura, not one of my favorite people, but certainly Chmura was someone who, he and Favre really seemed to get on together. And then, of course, I did love 86, Antonio Freeman. On the statistics on that, they were actually fairly close because there were both teams had 21 first downs. Actually, the net yards, Green Bay had more than Denver. They had, of course, they had three turnovers compared to two, and they each side made a field goal. So the game, there are a number of game notes there that, you know, Ryan Longwell was also one of my all-time favorites. And, you know, he was a great kicker, and he did make that Green Bay kick. And for that field goal, he was really someone who was someone that they could count on. So what else, you know, what else? Let me go to a commercial or spot, and then we'll talk about at least one more game. And maybe the Giant fans would like to hear something more about the Super Bowl 25, January 27th, 1991. So that, you know, because that was really a very, very close game. So we'll talk about that game when I come back.
¿Sabía que de cada cinco personas hay una que lucha con síntomas difíciles de salud mental? NAMI es una organización estatal sin fines de lucro. Somos empleados voluntarios. Somos la voz de la nación sobre las enfermedades mentales. NAMI te ofrece grupos de apoyo, educación e información. Nuestro programa educativo de Familia a Familia está dirigido por miembros de NAMI para familiares y amigos de personas que luchan con dificultad de salud mental. Llámanos al 888-803-3413. Recuerda, no estás solo. NAMI está contigo y no hay salud sin salud mental.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay, we're back with the sports guys, and rather than talking about the Giants, I think I'll talk about Super Bowl 24, January of 1990, was in New Orleans, Louisiana. And by the way, that was a fun place to watch a Super Bowl, and I think probably a fun place to watch any game. I did go to a Super Bowl down in New Orleans, and you walk from the quarter to the stadium, meaning the French Quarter to the stadium, and then after the game, you walk back again. And so it's really a nonstop party. In fact, there were so many people that came from Green Bay who didn't have tickets, and they actually went down to party in New Orleans and then took a flight back to Green Bay and watched the game, as I recall, watched the game in at Lambeau Field in Green Bay. But it was very different than going down to, well, I know that they certainly have some music down there, but I'm sure that that audience is also different. But this was very different than the Mardi Gras, very different. So anyway, let's talk about the, I guess, the game that they called the Orange Crushed. And this is from standpoint of Jerry Rice. So he said that coming off one of the most dramatic victories in Super Bowl history, the 49ers headed into the 1989 season, having lost a great head coach. And if anyone remembers, that was their coach had been Bill Walsh. He retired. So they actually stayed within the organization with his replacement. So the head coach was George Seifert at that time. And he'd been, George had been part of the defensive system for a long time. And so when he took over, he preferred to be more behind the scenes and let the players take front stage. Now, of course, the 49ers were determined to show that the system they had developed was what made the franchise great. And according to Jerry Rice, they were strongly motivated to make their own statement by repeating as Super Bowl champions under this new rookie head coach. So the, you know, NFL, and they had been really dominant, the 49ers. I saw a couple games out there, and unfortunately, they were not games that the Packers won. So they had, and this is also important, and I think that this is what has not been happening more recently, but they had 20 of 22 starters returning. So, you know, that was important. They had basically the same team that they had the year before. And they also had, they were bringing in some linemen with experience. And, you know, everybody knew that they had to work hard. They had worked hard. They'd been cooperative. And they wanted to start again and finish as Super Bowl champions. So they actually had, their record was something like 14-2 losses, considered the NFL's number one offense. And, of course, their offensive coordinator at that time was someone who I began became very well acquainted with when he moved to Green Bay as the head coach. And, of course, that was Mike Holmgren. And so the Montana was having a great season. He had been working through injuries, a number of injuries. But he, I think that may have been his greatest season. He completed 70% of his passes, threw 27 touchdowns. Jerry Rice led the league in touchdowns and receiving yards. And, you know, there were other, you know, Pro Bowl players on that team. Explosive offense, really, really explosive offense. And they, you know, outscored their opponents, not 2-1, but, you know, something like their opponents had about 250 points to their almost 450 points. So they went to Louisiana, the Superdome, and that was, as I said, Super Bowl 24. And they were facing at that point one of the toughest defenses in the NFL. The new coordinator, defensive coordinator, was Wade Phillips. And, you know, the Denver Broncos were, you know, to be, you know, not a team that you could easily think you're going to walk all over. So, and the Broncos that year had allowed the fewest points in the NFL and also had forced the most turnovers in the AFC. Which was 43 turnovers, which was pretty amazing. So the defensive backfield, you know, were really bragging at that time. They would say they were making a lack of experience with hard hitting. They're just, you know, they were, you know, they were the upstarts, obviously. And the you know, the San Francisco had won three Super Bowls. They were a 12-point favorite. But according to members of that team who talked afterwards, they worked hard all week. They were really in shape, ready to go. Just really out there. They wanted to make it four in a row, or four Super Bowls, excuse me. So one of the things that Rice remembered later on was that the first drive was to try to calm his emotions in that first drive. And they said, or he said, and I think other players have said, if you're too amped up, you'll make mistakes. And so, you know, especially receivers, you know, they really are concerned about making that first catch. And, you know, I guess they're really worried about making any catches, but certainly that first catch calms them down. They're in the groove. So that they drove, meaning San Francisco drove down from their own 34-yard line. It was, at that point, it was second and eight from the Broncos' 20-yard line, and they, you know, trying to remember, I believe, yes, that was a ball that Jerry Rice caught, and so he caught that one, and that point, I'm hesitating, but I think, yes, I think he did make that touchdown. And so, you know, that would get them into the rhythm from that first score. Then they went on, and they were able to build up a, what we would call a really big, you know, almost embarrassing lead and victory. And, of course, the owner of that team was also quite a DiBartolo was about as enthusiastic as anyone. Bill Walsh, of course, had a lot to prove. Had a lot to prove. I shouldn't say that. And of course, then we had George, who was taking over, so he really had a lot to prove. And I'll be back in just a minute.
When it met, Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
This is Tony Clark, Parent Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Honorton County.
Honorton Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Okay, enough of the 49ers. I'm Pat Smits. We're just talking about some of the Super Bowl games. And I guess for people who, you know, don't have the history, for younger children, let me talk about the Super Bowl I back January 15th, 1967. It was in Los Angeles. For some reason, for years, I thought it was in Miami. But it wasn't. It was in Los Angeles. And if I recall, the tickets cost, the general tickets cost about $13, and the stadium was not filled. But this is often known as Run Till Daylight. And let me give you some of my favorite thoughts about that. One was Max McGee. If you never saw Max McGee play, you really missed something. He had a solid NFL career as a wide receiver for the Green Bay Packers, but he was a first ballot Hall of Fame reveler, and it was all the more impressive when you considered that he slipped out innumerable times against such a stern disciplinarian as head coach Vince Lombardi. I know that there were legendary stories about Max. So he actually had 345 catches for more than 6,000 yards with 50 touchdowns over his 11-year career. But his record for breaking curfew was even more remarkable. Max was wore the number 85, and at one point, I once heard that he bragged that he snuck out 11 nights in a row without being caught, meaning that he, snuck out after curfew. And, chances are that may be the NFL record. So out in Los Angeles to play the first AFL-NFL World Championship game, this was against Kansas City. And, remember, not officially, the first game was not officially called a Super Bowl for a couple more years. So at that point, it was the AFL, or I would say NFL-AFL World Championship game. So at that point, Max McGee was 34 years old. He was definitely winding down his career, and that season he'd only had 4 catches. I guess he, from what he said later on, he figured he could step up his late-night antics because he didn't really think he was going to be seeing any action in the game. And so it wouldn't be, the only way he would receive any action would be if one of the starting receivers went down with an injury. So I've heard this story from Paul Hornung, that he tells a story about Max's greatest breach of curfew, which was the night before Super Bowl I, or as we used to call it, the AFL-NFL World Championship game. So that was when McGee was on his way out of the hotel room and practically ran over the coach who made bed checks. And, here it was, the NFL-AFL championship game, and Lombardi apparently was really stressed out all week. And, you know, because he had the pressure of the NFL on his shoulders. Remember, the AFL at that point was a startup league. Nobody thought that they would be able to play against the NFL. But there was a lot of concern. And those of you who remember the early days remember that when we called him Broadway, Joe Namath came up and promised he would win Super Bowl III. You know, everybody thought that he was just this braggart. But in any event, so Max and Paul, I mean, Paul was also, I remember meeting Paul. I was underage in one of the bars in Green Bay. And the players all used to come out to the bars after the games. But in any event, you know, Paul and, you know, Max, and I don't know if Paul was with Max that night, but, you know, he was certainly knew that he'd be playing the next day. But Max honestly thought that he would not. So Paul did not go out with Max, but apparently Max, the story goes that Max met three girls and call horning and asked him to come out. And because these were pretty girls, and you know, he's so he wants Paul Horning to sneak out of the room after curfew and meet the girls and go on to party that night. And so apparently Paul Horning was getting married just after the Super Bowl, and you know, he didn't go out to meet Max. And when you think about how what a partier Paul Horning was, in some ways that was somewhat surprising. But in any event, so Bart Starr at the time was the quarterback, and Bart Starr was a real together guy, certainly not a partier. I know he lived down the block from my husband Dave, and was really part of the community, and well-respected by everyone, but certainly never was in the Paul Horning and Max McGee league of partiers and wouldn't have wanted to. So apparently, after sleeping all night, Bart Starr went down to the lobby around 7:30 in the morning, probably to get a newspaper or, you know, a cup of coffee or whatever, and there he... I guess it was a newspaper, what he had said later on, that he had gone downstairs to pick up a newspaper, and when he was walking towards the front desk, you know, he saw Max McGee walking through the front door, and, you know, couldn't believe it, that here with the biggest game of their lives, just a few hours away, Max had been out partying all night long. But again, remember, Max was thinking he wasn't going to play. So, you know, apparently moving a bit slower while stepping from the team bus, but still grinning, McGee arrived at the stadium. And, you know, what apparently one of the other Packers' starting receivers remembered that Max told him in the locker room, don't go down today. This was Boyd Dollar. And Boyd Dollar knew that Max had been out the night before. And not sure that he knew he'd been out all night. But anyway, would have agreed that Max looked, you know, certainly worn and rough around the edges. And so again, Max told Boyd Dollar that he had been out all night. So everybody knew Max had the ability to burn the candle at both ends, but, you know, not all the time, and certainly no one would have expected him to do it the night before the biggest game of all of their lives, and, you know, certainly the biggest game of all the Packer fans, because this was, you know, the game to show how strong and competent the NFL was compared to the AFL. So apparently, you know, at that point, Packer players said that McGee was on the bench, barely able to stand up for the kickoff. And, you know, anyone that overheard him and heard them said that Horning was needling him about, you know, how he would handle it if he had to play. And, you know, obviously everybody realized that there was no way that he could make it if he had to go in. So other people that overheard them said that they were discussing Horning's bachelor party, when a distinctive voice yelled, "McGee," and the wide receiver thought the coach had caught him breaking curfew, and that would cost him $5,000. Well, in those days, breaking curfew would have cost him $5,000, which was a lot of money. And today it would be, you know, for what some of these players earn, it really wouldn't have been much at all. But actually, Lombardi was yelling for McGee to get out in the game. So actually, as improbable as it was, on the third play from scrimmage, Dowler injured his shoulder trying to make a block, and he had to leave the game. So here, McGee was, and it must have been really funny to sit on the bench and watch him, because apparently he forgot his helmet back in the locker room. So he grabbed one from a lineman, and, you know, amazingly produced the game of his life. And somebody said it was kind of like New York Yankees great Mickey Mantle hitting a game-winning home run with a hangover. And, of course, you know, McGee and Mantle stories, you know, are legendary. And not sure that you'd want to even tell some of the stories to kids, because you're trying to make sure that they eat right and exercise and get enough sleep and do everything that's necessary to be a good football player. And you had some of these people who had such amazing talent that they could do it without a night's sleep. So anyway, you know, other Packers still, you know, laugh about the memory of McGee staggering onto the field. And apparently said that when he got into the huddle, called the play before I threw up, and you know, let me out of the huddle before he passed out. I mean, he was really in bad shape. So, well, in the second series, on the third and three from the Chiefs' 37-yard line, Green Bay Bart Starr had to get rid of the ball early. So the pass was underthrown. However, McGee reached back off his hip, pulled it in, and took off down the middle until he reached the end zone. So in a game where he expected to watch from the sidelines, McGee had scored the first touchdown in Super Bowl history. I mean, I think this is one of the most memorial. It's, you know, it's the game that everybody thinks of because it was the first, although it was a world championship, it was the first Super Bowl. And Max McGee was the Packer who scored the first touchdown in that game. So he actually went on to nearly double his entire season's output by making 7 catches in the game. Remember, he had only made 4 the entire season. He was 34 years old. He was on his way out. And, you know, other teams might have traded him, but the Packers kept him on. But he certainly wasn't a starter that year, and not a starter in the Super Bowl, and not expected to play in the Super Bowl. So his catch was almost 20 yards per reception. He had a total of 138 yards. He had another touchdown reception in the second half and also made a 37-yard catch in the final period that led to a touchdown and won the game. So Green Bay won that game 35-10, and Dowler later said that he might have made the biggest play of the game by getting hurt on the third play of the game. As the way it turned out, that possibly was true. And Super Bowl I was Max McGee's day. Everybody was really happy for him, including Hornig, who usually wouldn't have been happy for anyone other than himself. Lombardi called on Max instead of others who could have filled Dowler's spot. And, Lombardi was good at this. Somehow he knew that Max was so competitive that he would just make big plays. And it was, he really delivered in the clutch and had one of the best days of his career. And, so Max was always legendary in Green Bay. He really was. So who else were on that starting lineup? As I said, starting lineup was not, Max was not on it. Bart Starr at quarterback, Jim Taylor, another great guy to watch. Elijah Pitts, Bill Curry, Jerry Kramer, and there are stories about Jerry, too, that were funny. Forrest Gregg, another great player. I think most of them, I'm not sure about Bill Curry, I think most of them are in the Hall of Fame. Marv Fleming, Fuzzy Thurston, Bob Skoronski, Boyd Dollar, and Carol Dale. That was the offensive, the starting offense, and then you had some other guys who I love to watch. Willie Davis, especially Henry Jordan. Lionel Aldridge was, someone that I enjoyed. And, of course, I really liked Dave Robinson. Dave Robinson was one of my favorites. I was so glad when he went into the Hall of Fame. And, of course, you had Ray Nitschke, who was ferocious. I mean, my husband met and spent some time with Ray at one point when we were in Dallas for a playoff. And I met him in New Orleans. He was, after football, he was this big teddy bear around Green Bay. But believe me, he was ferocious and looked ferocious when he was playing. And then we had Herb Adderley, Bobby Jeter, Willie Wood, another great guy. So actually, we've kind of come to the end of the program, and I think I may have one more spot. And hopefully John and Bill will be back next week to rescue me and have a lot more to say, because it's certainly much more fun when the three of us are here. So have a great weekend. It looks like it's going to be a great weekend, and see you next week.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
And again, thanks to Hunterdon Medical Center and all of our sponsors, as Chris is so apt to say, the views of the individual DJs on this radio station, don't blame it on the Hunterdon Chamber. We're not expressing any official views of the chamber. We're just kind of on our own. And but here we are, and I enjoy the sports games and sports guys, and of course you know, those of us who are absolute football junkies don't mind talking about even the games that go back to the early days of football and the early days of the Super Bowl. So we'll be back next week, and I hope everyone has a good weekend. Remember, should be a good weekend, maybe 20% chance of